Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. We'll be welcoming in our audience on TSN 4 in about 10 minutes. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Mike Johnson. Right now it's Gino Retta with The Flow hosting our Hockey Hall of Fame coverage.
Gino was excited to hear that
the barbershops.
Barbershops and salons are opening back up because I love his commitment to not getting his hair cut, but he's got some flow happening on television right now.
Well, it's he's rocking it. It's a look,
it's a
all
gorgeous
right.
Thing, yeah.
And he's still got it, so I'll give him that.
Smoke him if you got him.
Speaking of greats, your Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2020. Mm-hmm. Jerome McGinley, Marian Hossa, Doug Wilson, after 24 years, Kevin Lowe, Kim St. Pierre, and Ken Holland goes in as a builder, mm-hmm. which I don't think anyone's arguing on any of those.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
There are a few players who didn't make the cut that I'm sure, you know, we can make arguments and they will eventually get in. I know, you talked about Keith Tkachuk yesterday.
I said Alfie McGillney Tkachuk yesterday. I did not say Lowe or Wilson, but listen, Doug Wilson's case is exceptionally strong. I probably have some recency bias because I didn't play against Doug Wilson. He kind of was out of the game by the time I started playing in the NHL. So I don't remember him. I don't remember watching him as being great, but he won a Norris. He scored 39. Like, his numbers are great. They're probably Hall of Fame caliber numbers. Now, 24 years is an eternity to wait, so good on him to wait that long and get in. Kevin Lowe played on great teams, done a lot of winning, maybe not the individual stats, but certainly had done a lot of winning in his career. So congratulations to all. It's a day to be celebrated, not necessarily worry about who didn't make it, but really celebrate the people who did, including the lock of them all. The one thing we didn't have to talk about was the fact that Jerome McGinley was going to make it because Iggy's numbers, his career, his accomplishments, on the ice, let alone what a tremendous person he was off the ice and is off the ice, made him a no-brainer first ballot guy. So not surprised to see him in there at all.
Yeah, give us like the opposition's take on Jerome McGinley because your careers crossed paths, and I'm sure
We played against each other a whole bunch. Now, Iggy, he had a smile and a nice guy demeanor, but he was fiercely competitive, and he was one of those guys I found when I would play against his line. When he was with Calgary, I was playing out in Arizona, and you tried not to make him mad because he was one of those guys, you poke the bear, like he was always good no matter what, but if you got him angry, then he got scary good because then he got kind of physical and chippy and mean and even more so than usual, and it made your job that much more difficult. So he was just a bull, like just really, really strong in and around the puck. In the battles, in the areas in front of the net where you got to go to score goals. We know how well he could shoot it, but just that's what I always think is that it was such a grind to physically try to compete with him night in, night out. And maybe that's the greatest compliment to him. We know about the skill and the shooting and this goal scoring touch, but he brought it nightly on a physical level where it was tough to compete against him because he was, stronger than you were and he worked as hard as you did every single night. So he won more battles than lost when we knocked up against each other on the ice. But, Mark, one time Jerome and I were paired up in a Ryder Cup-style golf tournament in Ireland, head-to-head. We played 18 holes on the last day, and we're on the range beside each other before our final round. And, it's not that serious. We're talking. We're joking. All of a sudden, he hits a ball, and you see his driver fly 60 yards into the driving range. He snapped his driver before he played. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, go get another one or I won't play with my driver. He was very rattled. Like, nope, I got you. I'll beat you anyways. But that was the one time I got the best of Jerome McGinley was definitely on the driverless 18 holes in Ireland.
So he was using his 3-wood?
Yes, he was maxing, which he could probably hit it farther than me anyway, so it probably even things up, really. But he had to go with 3-wood only that day and play with 13 clubs where I had the full 14. So I used it to my advantage.
So you won the match?
I did win the match.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we'll we don't necessarily have to bring that up when he
I lost way more than I won, but I remember I did win that one, in fact.
Yeah.
He won the hockey ones, I won the golf ones. That's because he played in the spring and I usually have the springs off. That's how it works.
That is true. And so many, if you're from Alberta, you obviously immediately remember him as a Calgary Flame. And not to say that we don't in this part of the country, but you think of those Team Canada appearances, and in particular, you know, 2010, setting up Crosby for the golden goal. 2002, I think a lot of people forget yes. that he, like, just...
He was a late invite. He snuck Wasn't he to in. Camp?
Yeah, yes. like, he was... I think he filled in for, like, Simone Gagné. Someone got hurt.
In the summer camp, which yeah. was being held in Edmonton or Cal, and he had to, like, they said, listen, who's good, who's in the neighborhood? And Iggy was around, so he drove up, and I guess he turned heads in the summer, followed it up with a great regular season, and then played in 02, and played a significant role. Remember him, you know, that late goal against the Americans, back door, slamming it in. I think it was a sack pass that got over to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just an NHL Hall of Fame, right?
No.
It's a Hockey Hall of Fame. So he was part of a dynasty in Kamloops. That Kamloops team was stacked, and he was as good as they came on it. World Juniors, World Championships, Olympics, all the international play where he excelled, not just the Hall of Fame numbers in the NHL as well.
Yeah, and those, what did they win, back-to-back Memorial Cups?
I think they won three. He can tell us about it. I don't know if he was there for all three, but I think they won three in a row. Shane Doan, Darcy Tucker, Tyson Nash was on that team. Our own Ryan Rashog made an appearance, I think, around
That's
that time
right.
in Kamloops. Maybe it was Corey Hirsch on the... Yeah, I mean, there was some Daryl Sador. There's some really good players that played on those groups.
All right, so we'll be joined by Jerome McGinley in just a couple of minutes to call into the show. And you look at this, you look at the class, and you know Kim St. Pierre, and it's, you know, you think of the women's game and how it's growing, and you think of those, you know, Canada versus U.S. rivalries, you know, so many important players and members of that rivalry that have grown the sport and have given young women, you know, a reason to kind of point to someone and say, okay,
yeah.
you know, like, that's who I want to be now. Like, I don't have to say I want to be Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky. I can say I want to be Cassie Campbell or Kim St. Pierre. And I put her right in that mix. So it's great to see Kim St. Pierre, you know, as a player. And you know, she's not going in as a builder. But in a way, you can say she was a part of that core that built the women's game in this country, in the United States, and throughout the world.
Yeah, and I think... they should be recognized for the great players they are, whether it's Cammy Granato or Kim St. Pierre, all those initial women that are going into the hall, because they paved the way. And it was not easy when they were getting going. And they still don't have as much support as they need, but they had even less back then. And they were really grinding it out and working hard for the love of the game, because they wanted to play. And it wasn't for financial reasons. It was just because they loved hockey. And so... congratulations to her for sure, because she played a long time for the national team. And listen, if you're the goaltender for Canada,
mm-hmm.
then you're probably the best goalie in the world, or one of the best three goalies in the world.
Yeah.
So the fact that she was a starter for Canada for the better part of a decade plus tells you how good she was for how long she was that good. Yes, you do a lot of winning with Canada, but you still need to be able to play as a goaltender. And so good for them. And it's good that we continue to add different people to the hall, and more women deserve to go there. And so good for Kim St. Pierre. Congratulations to her, because there's, you know, Jennifer Botterill was up for consideration. There were lots of people that you could think of, but St. Pierre got the nod, and deservedly so.
Yeah, such an impressive class. If you're just joining us, the class of 2020 to go into the Hockey Hall of Fame, Jerome McGinley, Marian Hossa, Doug Wilson, Kevin Lowe, Kim St. Pierre, and Ken Holland goes in as a builder. And, you know, Ken Holland has been sort of the bar set for GMs in the league with what he did with Detroit. Edmonton's hoping that continues.
Right, yeah. You know, some of that building prowess over to Edmonton, you're right. But, I mean, what he did for the Red Wings with the Ilitch family, I mean, they really just turned that entire franchise around. They were really down in the dumps when the Ilitches bought them and when Ken Holland became the GM and he took over, and just a long run of sustained excellence. So... I can't argue. I'm sure there's lots of different people you could put in there in the builder category that would be deserving, but Ken Holland has been around the game, it seems like, for 30 something years in a major capacity, been part of international teams with Team Canada as well, been involved in lots of hockey summits and helped shaping the game and the direction it goes, not just at the NHL level, but at the minor league level, also the kind of the young person level. So a deserving class, but no doubt the headliner was always going to be Jerome McGinley in this
That's
class.
Right. There's always debate when it comes to Hall of Fame classes. No debate when it comes to our next guest. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, the one, the only, We can call him a Hall of Famer now, Jerome Iginla. Congratulations. How does it sound to hear Hall of Famer and your name attached to each other?
Hey guys. Thanks a lot. No, it sounds really good. It sounds awesome. Pretty neat. You know, it's a pretty special day, and it's a little bit overwhelming, to be honest. Yeah, it's like it's hard to believe. You know, it makes you think back so much over your career and stuff. So it's exciting, and it's nice to share with family and friends, and reflective of how fortunate I've been, for sure.
Congrats, Iggy. No surprise, I'm sure. So most guys might be on pins and needles, maybe like hanging by the phone, but not hanging by the phone, like they don't want to be disappointed. You know you're going to get called. So did you have everyone gathered around the living room waiting because you knew the call was coming?
No, I don't know about that being the case. I haven't slept well the last couple nights, especially last night. I was nervous and excited, and you know, I know there's tough decisions and lots of great players that they had to look at, and so I was nervous and excited, and I actually got the times mixed up. I'll take the blame, but Peter Hanlon with the Flames, I got to give him a little bit too. We thought it was like coming in at about 2:30 Pacific, so say no 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. So, and he said, yeah, it takes a while, and I don't think it's going to. So I wasn't home. I wasn't actually home, and my family was. We were going to get together at about 12:45, 1, and so I was out and missed Lanny's call. I felt so bad, and I was flustered. I couldn't believe it, but my buddies and stuff will bug me. I guess I was probably late a little bit in my career, so it's I guess it's fitting. But I felt really bad, but still thrilled, and was excited to call family after.
That's awesome.
Do you got to call him back, Jerome? Do you got to call Lanny McDonald back? Say, Lanny, did you call?
Yeah.
What for?
Well, I was renting a vehicle. And I thought I had like literally an hour and a half to spare. And a Toronto number came up, but I thought maybe I don't know who that is.
It's probably Noodles.
Noodles.
Buddy, you know what I mean?
Let maybe it go
a buddy.
To me. Yeah.
So I thought, and then it called back. And I'm like, oh my God, maybe it is. And then it called back the same number again. I'm like, I'm just finishing up doing the outskirts of the car where you have to look at the dents or anything. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to go. But I can't accept it right now. And it was just the most, you know, so I called him back as soon as I could, like 2 minutes later. But we had a plan of potentially meeting together and hoping for a phone call and being with the family and stuff. But it was still really special and something I won't forget. But it was not what I was imagining. You know what I mean?
Jerome Iginla joining us on Overdrive here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also now on TSN 4 as we welcome in that audience. Jerome, before you came on, I was asking Mike what it was like to play against you. And, you know, among all the talents that you have, he said, you know, you're kind of the smiling assassin, but also don't poke the bear. Don't bother him. Did you kind of have a switch in a game where you're kind of at one sort of mood and then somebody did something and you kind of turned into a different Jerome Iginla on the ice?
I guess maybe a little bit. I guess I kind of maybe known for that a little bit, but it was, you know, when I was younger, I was like a most sportsmanlike type player and I hated being in the penalty box and loved to try to score goals and get points and those type of things as a forward. But when I went to junior and I worked with Don Hay and trying to make the NHL and kind of develop a style of player, he helped me be a little bit more physical, a little bit more intense. And then when I got to the NHL, you know, I had some good coaches that kept working with me. And, you know, part of it, Darryl Sutter, he really, really focused on that and trying to make sure I didn't, you know, he would tell me maybe I would, like, you know, fall asleep a little bit sometimes. But I don't know, you know, it was kind of like trying to find adrenaline sometimes in games and trying to find any edge. And some days you come out, you feel awesome. You don't, you know, you just play and that's the way it goes. And some days you feel terrible. But if you can find a reason to get the adrenaline going, a little angry, a little upset out there on the ice, and it wasn't personal, you know, and
felt that way.
Just kinda, no, Mike, you know, you're a hard guy to keep up to. So, you know, it was kind of trying to just, some days you just try to find a little bit of a spark to either spark the team or even spark my own game personally, where you just try to, and Darryl usually did a good job of trying to get that out of his guys, and he definitely helped me in that area, and sometimes it was a fine line. Sometimes you get go overboard, and that's all you think about is trying to hit people and run out of the way, and you have no offense. So it was a fine line, and trying to balance the offense and the physical side. And some days you got it, it went well, and some days I was in trouble.
Iggy, you go in the Hall of Fame. I think everyone associates you with the Calgary Flames for how great you were, for how long you were there. But maybe some people might not realize you were drafted by Dallas and traded before you even got to the NHL to Calgary for Joe Nieuwendyk in a really big deal. Do you remember what it felt like at that time? Were you somehow disappointed? Like, oh my, I'm traded already. I haven't even played a game yet, and I'm already getting shopped around. What was that like getting moved from Dallas to Calgary before your career even started?
Yeah, it was very surprising and very shocking. I was actually at the World Junior Camp, and you know where you get those morning calls and stuff, and the players get them about who's cut and stuff. So it was after the team was already made. So I got a call in the morning, so I wasn't nervous, like, oh, I was going to get cut or anything, but I got a call in the morning from the coach, Marcel Comeau, of Team Canada at the time, and he said I'd been traded. And honestly, my first thought was the Kamloops Blazers. And I was like, what? You know, like, I really enjoyed Kamloops. We had won two Memorial Cups. And it was just this, but then he said it was the Dallas to the Flames, because that wasn't even on my radar. It wasn't something that I even imagined. You know, the NHL was still far off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, of course, you're not thinking about that. You're worried about Junior and Kamloops and trying to get a three-peat.
Yeah, and trying to play World Juniors and all that. Yeah. So it was shocking. And then, it was a little bit where, you know, as a player, you wonder, did I not live up to what Dallas's expectations were when they see me, and are they not seeing me progress the way they hope? And then part of it, you know, so that was there. But then after talking to Bob Gainey, and then I talked to the GM, Al Coates, you know, I felt better about it. And, you know, they were just in two different places as a group. Dallas was going for it, and they got an amazing player, obviously, and Joe Nieuwendyk, who was a huge part of their group. And you know, they went on to win, and he was a huge part of it. And so it was an honor, but it was a little bit unsettling and a little bit unnerving. But I'm happy, you know, I got a great opportunity in Calgary, got to live close to home, family and friends, got to go to games and be there. And it was an amazing experience. I got treated really well, great opportunities, grow with a young team. And so it is, you know, it wasn't what I expected getting drafted, but it's thankful for how it worked out. And Dallas is a great organization too. Obviously, love my time with Calgary.
And you know, the country loved you for your play when you represented Canada, and especially at the Olympics, where you always rose to the occasion, whether it's listening to Sidney Crosby and passing him the puck so he could score the golden goal. But also, a lot of people forget in 2002 that you really weren't in the mix, and you jumped into that training camp to fill in for Simone Gagné, who's dealing with a shoulder injury. How did you, in that process, win over a guy like Pat Quinn and become such an integral part of a gold medal winning team?
Sure, that's a good question. So I got the late invite, and just being on the ice with that group of players and that talent, it gave me a huge boost going into the year. And so that year, when in the camp selection for the actual team during the season, I was having a really good year, and I was one of the leading scorers in the league, and I really think that gave me a huge confidence boost and a real jolt at the start of the year. I've been, you know, where everything felt good. So I was, and even when I got that call, it was still like I couldn't believe I was going to be on Team Canada with those guys. And those are guys that I said Lemieux and Sakic and Yzerman and MacInnis and Brodeur, and those are guys I watched at 12 years old, you know, on Rock'em Sock'em, not all of them, but some of them. And Brodeur is probably like, he's not much older than me, eh?
So, yeah, that's right. Don't tell them that. Yeah.
But so it was so neat, so cool. And I actually remember when I was there, we had a tough start with Team Canada, and we got blown out by Sweden in the first game, and the lines got shifted, and Joe Sakic went from playing with, I think he was with Lemieux and Paul Kariya, to getting shifted to playing with myself and Simone Gagné on the next day. And I'm thinking, oh man, you know, what is he thinking? He's not really
he's not happy.
You know,
demotion.
For sure. And but you know, right away, when he came over and he said to us, he goes, oh man, I'm excited to play with you guys. Young legs, fast. We're going to do great. And it was so awesome. It gave us, you know, so much confidence and made us relax, and you know, he had an amazing tournament. Joe Sack, I think he was the MVP. You know, it was a thrill to play with him. But if he didn't come over and do that, I don't know, you know, my hands would have been tight and it would have been like, you know, on eggshells. And he just was, you know, such a great leader and person. And he knew what to say. And you can see all the success he had. But it was neat to see that up close. And I was very fortunate to get to play with him.
It's amazing. You're one of the best players in the league, leading goal scorer. You're on your way to winning an Art Ross that year, and you're still nervous to be around these superstars that you grew up looking up to, and you finally go on, you learn some things. I'm wondering, as the captain, the face of the franchise in Calgary, a lot of responsibility comes with that. Where did your leadership style, because you certainly handled it really, really well, Jerome, over the years, where did that come from? Did you learn anything from any players? Did anyone have special words that kind of help guide you as a leader of an NHL club?
Oh, thanks. Well, definitely lots of people, you know, in Calgary. And I think it started, you know, really more in junior in Kamloops, getting a chance to play with Shane Doan and Darcy Tucker and, you know, Tyson Nash and a lot, Ryan Huska, Nolan Bummer, lots of NHL players, Jason Strudwick. And I was very, very blessed to get to go to that organization. You leave minor hockey and it's all, you know, it's about fun as it should be and everything. And all of a sudden it's a little bit more serious. You know, the WHL is kind of that step semi-pro. And I got to learn from some great guys, and Don Hay helped me there. And then in the NHL, there's, you know, it's endless. I got to play with great leaders, Robin Regier, Conroy, Dave Lowry, Jelena. It's like endless. I was really, you know, you get to wear the C as a captain, but that's you know, that, and that's a huge honor, but it's all the guys around you, and it's not one guy by any means. It's like you need a really good leadership group. I had some coaches that really helped me, like I said, Daryl and, you know, Pierre Page, to see him my first year. And, you know, it's something that you keep learning right to the end of your career, and there's things you'd like to redo and do differently and stuff, but you do your best at the time. And but I'm thankful that I got to play with the guys I did, and they helped me. You know, Regier, I played with him a long time, and he's a guy that, you know, that on every, whatever team he is on, they're better for it, you know, and he has a different way to lead. He's kind of gruff, and, you know, he's a great guy, but he's gruff when it comes to the rink, and he's focused, and he's driven. But, you know, I really enjoyed, and when he left, you even appreciate that much more some of those guys and how good of leaders they were, and he was definitely one of them.
Well, you are going into the Hall of Fame. You will have to write a speech. I know he personally won't ask this question, so I'll do it for him. Will you mention Jamie McLennan?
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of laughter there.
Well, because, he's a funny, he was great. He's another guy that I know he's great at his job now, and he makes a lot of jokes and stuff, but he was sure good for a team. I mean, he knows how to just, speaking of leadership, you know, he knows how to help lead in different ways and bring everybody in and make them feel part of the team. So he was another guy that I was, he's a good friend of mine, and loved my time getting a chance to play with him. But it's also neat to see guys like that and how important they are a part of teams. And so now I guess I get to actually say I will have a speech. So that's really cool. And kind of nerve wracking too, to think that there actually is a speech, you know, so, but really, really neat, and a very special day. And I've been very blessed. Hockey is an awesome sport. We're made of awesome people and all the way through minor hockey, and teaches lessons and all that stuff, but great friendships. And it's neat now to reflect back. It makes you do that, but I sure miss it and being around it, but it's nice to be, coaching with the kids and still being involved and having a lot of fun.
Yeah, just be quick, be funny, be emotional, make them laugh, make them cry, do it all in 3 minutes. Your speech will be perfect, Iggy. Yeah. No challenge whatsoever.
Very easy.
That should be easy to pull off. Now, listen, every time something like this happens in anyone's life in any capacity, you do get a little reflective, whether it's thinking about the sacrifices, the journey, your family. What do you think of first? And maybe, and hockey-wise, you know, greatest memories, greatest disappointments, and kind of what stands out as you think back on your journey?
Yeah, it does make you very reflective. And I said it, but it's really how much help you need. You need just to make it to the NHL, just to make it to junior, the NHL, all the car rides, all the stuff you hear about, read about, been through yourself. it's something that you can't do it without the help. And I had grandparents, my mom, my dad, so many people influenced me in so many ways, played in great teams, organizations, friendships, unbelievable passers I played with. I mean, I was a goal scorer. I wouldn't even be near the goal scorer if I didn't get to play with guys like Conroy and Tange.
No, don't let Connie Christy. Hear this. Do not let Connie hear this. You will not hear the end of this.
Well, you think I love to try to get a one-timer off or be around the net and try to get open. And if guys aren't looking for you and they don't have the ability to make those plays or draw someone to them and shoot it back door or shoot it across circle to circle for the one-timer, it's useless. You know, I wouldn't have been able to play that game, and I definitely appreciate it and know what they did for me and how much of a part of it was. And in some years, you don't have that same connection or chemistry with guys, and you do feel it. It is more of a grind, and when you do get the chemistry with guys that are, you play give and goes with, and that they look for you extra, like the guy, like I said, Connie Tangs and, Mark Savard, when I got to play with him, it makes it so much easier. And, Camilleri, guys that, he was a great goal scorer, but he's also a really good passer. Just, it's the chemistry, and you know that. And when it just makes it so much, the good days are a lot easier, and you have a lot fewer of the hard grinding days, And so, those are neat, but you got me sidetracked. I want to say something, or I sidetracked myself. It was, I forget the question you asked, reflective and, what else?
Best moments, worst moments, like on the ice, highs and lows.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry, I was rambling there. Best moments. Best moments have to be, getting drafted. That was really, really cool. Getting to play in my first game in against the Blackhawks. Go from the night before, watching highlights. I got called up. Didn't expect to play in Calgary. We played an afternoon game. I got to be on the line at center, Theo Fleury and German Titov, and going to corners against Chelios and shoot on Eddie Belfour, face-offs against Roenick, all within 24 hours, and I didn't expect it. It was a game I'll never, ever forget, and it was so cool. Of course, World Juniors, winning gold with Canada. That was right up there. And I was going to say, of course, the Olympics. They're so close. People ask me which one's ahead of the other. Pretty neat to do it at home in Canada in OT. But being on the team with Lemieux and Sakic and Yzerman and winning, the first time in 50 years was very, very close. And then the worst moments, it's kind of the worst and the best at the same time was, the 0-4 run. Each series, beating Vancouver in seven and beating Detroit. I mean, Kipper stood on his head in that. He won that series for us in my mind. And we almost had no business in there, but he just was unbelievable. Couldn't believe we pulled that off. So we went on a run and being that close to a Stanley Cup, that stings for sure. That's without question the hardest. But at the same time, I would do it again. And I'm thankful that we got that close. Got to experience that run where you as a team and a group of players, and you see a dressing room and that excitement, and but to be that close in game six, one goal, and then overtime kind of chance, and then 2-1 in the game seven, it stings, and it probably always will a little bit, but at the same time, it's also a really, really good memory. So those are probably it. I don't know.
The show is only 3 hours long, so we actually will run out of time if we do go through all your greatest accomplishments, which is saying something. And I'm trying to, flatter you, but saying that you are a worthy inductee is probably the understatement of the day. You are headlining the class of 2020. We expected it, and I know that you are going to play the modest card because that's what you did throughout your whole career, but we hope that you can enjoy this with your family tonight and the days to come, and we're looking forward to that speech about noodles. So it should all be good. We appreciate you coming on Overdrive on such a celebratory day for you.
Hey, well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. And if you have any, you said you've made that speech sound easy. So just send me any of your ideas, please.
Okay. Mike can Perfect. Be your speechwriter. Don't worry about that. So congratulations
congrats,
again,
Iggy. Jerome. Well deserved.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
There you have it. Jerome McGinley, member of the 2020 Hockey Hall of Fame class. He is joining us, or he joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom's open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. Are you buying that he didn't sleep well over the last couple nights?
It's amazing. Like, I'm like, I believe him, because why would he say it otherwise? But, like, what are you nervous about? I mean, maybe just how he's wired, or maybe that's how the competitors are wired. They don't want to take anything for granted. But, of course, he's going into the Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest goal scorers of the era. It's amazing what he was able to do in the dead puck era where it was hard to score. But, yeah, I mean, I guess so. I love the story, though. He's renting a car, and he's worried about scratches on the bumper when he's got a Hall of Fame call coming in from Lanny McDonald. Fantastic stuff. So, good guy. Good to hear him smile and laugh. And what a wonderful honor. I mean, he did it. And not that he didn't have help, because he talked about a lot of players he played with. But for a lot of time, he was the headliner in Calgary, and he was the best player, and he was the guy that we all tried to stop. Every game plan was surrounded and focused about him and controlling him and stopping him, and yet he still churned him out year after year after year. 40 goals, 40 goals, 50 goals, 40 goals. Just a picture of consistency and someone that is a great role model for any player that was coming up. Say, look, absolutely, look at that guy.
Absolutely.
He's our best player. Look how hard he works, how hard he trains. He's 34, still the fittest guy on the team. Deserves to be where he ended up today. Hall of Fame. Congratulations, Jerome.
We'll get some more stories about Jerome McGinley from Noodles, who joins us at 6:05. But coming up next, it's Wednesday, Jerry's Percentages, when we return on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and on TSN 4.
You're going to want to hear this.
Jerry's Percentages.
I don't love being commissioner as much as I used to. I actually love it even more.
That's the voice of a f***ing
Hall of Famer.
Stop it, Jerry. Just stop it. You've been far too negative lately, and we've had enough. I'll be handing out some Zen takes today. Look for something positive each day, even if some days you have to look a little harder.
Wow. Al's Brothers Farmer hijacking the segment.
Wow. He came in with deep thoughts.
We do.
That was nice.
Jerry's Percentages, or Al's Brothers Farmer, is brought to you by BPC, Best Portuguese Chicken. From two people to 300, let BPC, Best Portuguese Chicken, do the cooking. 942 The Queensway, Best BPC.ca. Okay, so we got some positivity here. Jerry's he's pretty angry at most, so we'll see what Al's brother has here. What's the first take?
The Blue Jays finish above 500 over the course of their 60-game season.
Okay. You can kick it off, Mike.
I think that's about a 50-50 split.
You're right on the fence there.
I 49% likelihood that they do that. I just think they have such a tough division they go up against. Adnan earlier identified how tricky it will be to go against all these good teams, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Rays, plus some teams in the NL East. It's just going to be tough. I love the youth. I love the excitement, but they're in tough.
Yeah, they are in tough, and I'm kind of in the middle where I believe that they'll play over 500, so I'll go at 60%, but I don't think that they'll go so far to make a playoff spot. I think they're still behind Tampa and the Yankees, but they have a chance at maybe finishing higher than Boston. My rationale is there a lot of young players maybe don't know better. You know, they're not used to the 162, right. And it's just like, let's go out there and do it, and they don't need the month or two to warm up, and so that's why things could be interesting. And Nate Pearson, you can kind of take the shackles off of him, and he can throw 100 miles per hour. You don't have to worry about the
let
innings.
Let her fly.
Let her fly.
And they got the ace that they signed from the Dodgers.
Yeah,
Ryu Kim. We forgot all about him.
Yeah, we have not really touched. I read somewhere that he did get tested recently, and he tested negative, and he hopes to have a bullpen session next week. So that would be your opening day starter, I would guess. The Jays. That at least was the plan before this all happened. Al's brother, what else do you have?
One of Sidney Crosby or Alexander Ovechkin will make their way to another Stanley Cup final this season.
Okay,
Ovi. Listen, It's tough to bet against those guys, right? I mean, they're really good. They're going to have a chance. Who knows in the reseeding? Because, you know, if you take one of those two teams, usually the likelihood of them coming out of the Metro is pretty high because they're going to finish, meet each other in the second round. But I would say 33% likelihood. I still think Tampa and Boston might be the two best teams in the Eastern Conference right now. So, so it'll be hard work for them to get there, but it's tough betting against the two of those guys.
Yeah, since this game is all about the percentages, I'll play the percentages and just say, yeah, there's a better chance that one of the, you know, those two teams, as good as they are, as good as those players are, will slip up. So I'll say 40% that the Penguins or the Capitals, Crosby or Ovechkin, in terms of making the Stanley Cup final.
It's such a crapshoot. Like, yeah. I have no idea.
Antonio Brown is signed before the start of the 2020 NFL season.
Ooh, and he's been linked to Seattle recently.
I know. I mean, the fact that he's linked to teams show that teams are open to signing him, and he's still a really good player. He hasn't played football for a couple of years, but he's still really good. Not a lot of miles on his body. So I'm going to say 75%. That's how sports goes. I mean, it doesn't matter really kind of what you do, how you behave. If you can help a team on the field, then you probably will get a chance to get to that field. So I'm going to say 75%. He'll get another shot somewhere.
I'm pretty high on this as well. I'll go 76%.
Oh, my goodness. You prices right me.
I will prices right you because you're right, and I feel like there has been enough of a distraction going on in the world that we haven't talked about how much of a distraction he would be to your team. Right. And
has he been a distraction lately in his life? I don't even know. I haven't heard much about him, so maybe he's kind of just living a normal life now.
Yeah, Antonio Brown coming to a training camp, whenever those will be and however they will take place, near you, and maybe week one as well. We'll see.
Blue Jays first-round pick Austin Martin reaches the majors before Austin Matthews wins a playoff series.
Oh, my goodness. No, oh, my goodness. So I got to run the numbers here. I'm going to say, now, by reaching the majors, I'm saying he's on the roster. Does he have to play in a game? I think he's going to be on the roster this year, this summer.
The kind of taxi squad that they might have.
Taxi squad. Maybe he gets in as a pinch runner one time or whatever in a blowout game. He gets a couple at-bats. So I'm going to say it's 70% because I just believe that the first-round pick, we talked to his coach. His coach said he's going to be ready to go this summer. Who am I going to question the coach? He runs Vanderbilt's program. They're a high-ranked program. He'll be playing before Matthews even hits the ice.
Now, what are we saying about this series with Columbus? That is not technically a playoff
That's
series?
It's not a playoff series, so they're going to win it anyways. They'll have to win the next one.
Right. I'm going to go 45%. I'm going to have a little bit of confidence there for the Maple Leafs that they will win that next series. And I don't like he's
It won't matter.
So
it
young.
Won't matter because he'll be playing before the hockey's
I don't
even
think
on.
I don't think he's playing this year.
Oh, he is. He's going to be on the roster.
Yeah, I don't. Well, that would be a great story.
He's 22. He's older than.
I know.
He's the same age as some of those young players anyway, so he's ready.
Okay.
The Raptors will take on Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers in the NBA Finals in one of the next two seasons.
Ooh. Okay.
Well, if it's going to be one of the next two, it's going to be this one. I think this will be their best chance to get to the final again. And I'm going to say, I mean, two things got to happen. Raptors have to make it. Kawhi has to make it. So I'm going to say that's not likely to happen. 15% chance that both those things happen this year. It is going to be a hard road for both clubs to get there. Probably the Lakers might, or the Clippers might even be easier than the Raptors. So 15%, it's going to be hard to do again.
You don't like the Raptors next season? You know,
Yeah, I mean, a third year in a row, it's just hard. It's just hard. You're going to have Brooklyn will be better and healthy, and, you know, Milwaukee will still be what they're going to be. Lowry will be another year older. So, no, I guess I don't like him as much as I like him right now.
Okay. Imagine they did play Kawhi Leonard next season.
It would be amazing.
And then he maybe comes back to the Raptors as a free agent.
No, Giannis is coming the year after.
Oh, sorry, Giannis. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to go 25% just to give a little more hope that would be such a crazy story to think of how this crazy season ends that way, but it's so many things have to the stars have to line up, and a guy named LeBron James will be standing in Kawhi Leonard's way, even though you could argue the Clippers are a better team, and also Avery Bradley, that's a big story for the Lakers.
He's not playing.
He will not play.
Right.
But J.R. Smith is going to save the day, so we'll see.
Well, of course. Why? He's always floating around somewhere.
Yeah.
He's available.
And he'll know the score this time. He will know the score. Let's get another take.
At least one current Maple Leaf finds his way to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I'm going to say that's like 90% that Austin Matthews is going to make the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I just think we just had Jerome Ginlon,
yep,
who did the hardest thing, scoring goals better than anyone throughout his career. I think Austin Matthews is going to score. He started so young. He started scoring so young. He's going to score 500, 600 goals. Once you get into those numbers, it doesn't even matter if you win a cup or win an Olympics or anything else. You're going to get in. So I'm saying if he stays healthy, it's 90% that Austin Matthews gets there.
Didn't Andy Petrillo already declare Frederik Andersen a Hall of Famer? Isn't he already in? Isn't
a that, Danish Hall of Famer? I think it was.
I shouldn't say which Hall of Fame. That's true.
Yeah.
I'll go, 85% Austin Matthews. Could be Mitch Marner. Could be both. You could do this question again. Two current Maple Leafs going in. I like the Austin Matthews. The fact that he, and we have a poll out actually right now because it is the anniversary of the Maple Leafs drafting Austin Matthews.
Right.
And whether or not he has lived up to the expectations. I don't know what else, outside of winning playoff series, he's supposed to do. He would have probably, I'm going to say he would have broken the single season goal record for the Maple Leafs if they had finished the season. Definitely would have got 50. And like you say, scoring goals,
And he started early. That's what matters. He didn't start when he's 21. He started when he's, 19 years old and started scoring right away.
Right. Let's get one more before we break.
Kyle Dubas will regret not drafting Captain Hazy B and will lose badly to Team Duthie during their golf match next week.
Hazy B.
I'm going to say 2%. It is not very likely that he will regret not drafting Hazy B. I mean, I don't know how the handicaps are going to play into this because presumably Hazy would be the highest handicap player, so he would get strokes. But listen, Jerry D knows what he's doing, and he's played competitive golf in front of people before. So I think Kyle Dubas, not surprisingly, he ran the numbers. He checked all the angles. He did his scouting, and he made a wise pick. I'm going to say 2%. Very unlikely there will be any regret whatsoever for not bringing on Brian Hayes.
I'm going to go slightly higher. Not even slightly, because you said 2%. I'm going to go 20% because Jeff O'Neill, as Bob Weeks said, is the best player out of the whole group.
Right.
And what is the one way that you could get to him psychologically?
This is true.
There are times that Hayes gets under his skin.
This is true.
For some random reasons, he's the guy that maybe can do it. I don't know if Jerry
D. To negate Jeff O'Neill, yes. Brian Hayes could prove valuable.
And then it's all on Duthie. And listen, Duthie's a multiple Gemini and Kenner Screen Award winner. He can handle the pressure, but I don't know if he can carry a team on a golf course. Maybe he can. So I'll go 20% that he will, he maybe will regret. As I say it, I'm kind of questioning my own self. So. Anyways, thanks to Al's brother. That's Al's brother's farmer's takes there. Jerry took the week off. He was just a little too negative, and he's also getting ready for the bubbles, most likely in Vegas/Vancouver, Edmonton, maybe Toronto. Still to come at the 6 o'clock hour, Noodles will join us, and also one of the best tennis analysts in the game, ESPN's Patrick McEnroe, will get his take on Novak Djokovic and those positive tests that happened in Europe and the upcoming U.S. Open, and how he feels about the Canadians after this long kind of pause of the season and what they can do in the Grand Slams this year. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and on TSN 4. We are going into the final hour of the show. Noodles and Patrick McEnroe will join us, and also a big debate on how we should end that final hour. Should we say we'll chat then? And we took it to Twitter. The poll started at 4 o'clock. Should Mark Rowe and Mike Johnson be allowed to use Hazy's We'll Chat Then to close out the show? And
where are we?
The slimmest of margins, 51.3%, say use it. Okay. So we'll see how that changes. But it's like,
okay, swing votes are available.
It's It's like the federal election. It's coming, going down to the wire here.
Yeah, so. Hanging Chad there to see if we can use it or not. We'll figure it out. Now, we got Patrick McEnroe coming on. Did he not have COVID? I think that he did. We'll check that
out. Yeah, he did.
I thought he went through it, so maybe he might give us a perspective of what it's like to deal with it, but also kind of how you feel coming out of it.
Yeah.
Because for these players, you know, we assume asymptomatic, young, healthy, in shape, but maybe give us a firsthand perspective of any lingering health impacts that maybe a top flight athlete might have to deal with. So,
yeah, I've had the privilege of getting to work alongside Patrick McEnroe at the U.S. Open. I've not worked with
him.
Do
you know, Mark, that Patrick and I have hit together before?
Oh, here in Toronto?
Yes. Here in Toronto, yeah.
Okay.
Like, at the place where I play tennis, he was there to do a clinic, and somebody I knew bid on an hour, 2 hours with him on the court, so I was one of the guys that one of my regular partners asked to come out there with, so I spent a couple hours on court with him.
Okay.
And he was just carving me the whole time. It was brilliant.
Oh, nice. Well,
yeah.
We didn't get John. John is, you know, he's not always available, but Patrick McEnroe, love his insight, love his work on ESPN.
Tremendous commentator.
Such a good commentator. So he'll join us in the 6 o'clock hour. Coming up next, noodles on Jerome Iginla and the entire 2020 class going into the Hockey Hall of Fame.